Get on Team Shaq with WynnBET. We're playing parlays, boosting odds, and laying the wildest prop bets. Don't miss another game. Download the WynnBET sports betting app today.
Sign up today and win $200 in free bets when you place a $10 first-time wager on a straight bet or parlay. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WynnBET is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.
We've got a new episode of Swings and Mishes coming up. For almost 50 years, All Year Cooling has been the place that keeps all of South Florida cool. Listen, it is April, and then you know, living here in South Florida, summer is coming, and you do not want to wait to have your system checked. You do not want to wait to replace your unit. You know how this goes. It gets very hot here, basically from the end of April into May and all the way through the summer into the fall. To give you an idea, 10 years ago, I called Tommy Smith at All Year. He is the owner. He's been the owner, he and his family, for decades. And I purchased a new unit from them. And here we are, 10 years later, I've had absolutely zero issues, and they have the best customer service of any air conditioning company I've ever used. In fact, I think I may have called Tommy twice personally in 10 years. I needed some help. And within the hour, they're at my house. They show up. Very professional. They do a great job, and then I'm good to go for months and months and years. They're incredible. In fact, if you schedule a new unit installed before the afternoon, they will come and put a new unit in your house in the same day. No one in South Florida can guarantee that. They offer up to 60-month financing. And remember, I personally use All Year Cooling, and Tommy has been a personal friend of mine for over 10 years. You call him, you let him know you want a cool unit in your house this summer. Don't wait till June till it breaks down. You have to do it now. Call 866-381-3554, or while you're listening to this podcast, take your phone out, go to their website, allyearcooling.com, click on the call now button. You'll get connected directly to them. And by the way, my friend, the owner, Tommy Smith, you can text him directly from your phone from the website right now, and he'll set you up. All Year Cooling is my personal place to go. They keep my home cool. They keep my family cool for more than a decade. The number again, 866-381-3554.
Hello, Marlins fans, and welcome to a weekend edition of Swings and Mishes. I know that's a little bit rare. I don't know if we've ever done a weekend episode, but I'm going to go ahead and call us the pinch hitters, in that this is just me and Dutch. It's Jeremy Taché, by the way. Hey, everyone that isn't used to me introducing the show by now. If you're not, I always introduce the show, so hey. And I'm joined by Michael Sunbake, or at Dutch Bake on Twitter, as those of you who listen so lovingly respond and reply to him. So, Dutch, it's nice to be talking with you on this Saturday morning.
I'm the Swings and Mishes fourth outfielder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what we are. We'll, no, you know what? I'm going to change the whole concept. We're the fourth outfielders. That's how I'm referring to this. We're not quite the utility infielders or anything like that,
because that
would get more playing time.
Yeah.
And not even the pinch hitters, because that would insinuate that we come in often, that we're the Lenny Harris of
the pop. We're like defensive replacements.
Yep.
Like, ooh,
defensive replacements is good too. We'll see what I label this when I do post it on Podbean and all of your other streaming services. But anyway, a minute and a half of just sort of rambling here. But maybe that's because the Marlins lost 11-2 last night. And it was a rough one. It was one of those games that was seemingly tearing Marlins Twitter apart. Everybody was pretty devastated by Pablo Lopez's start, more just because we all love Pablo Lopez so much. But Lopez was not at his best, I would say, in terms of pitching. He went 3 innings, 10 earned runs on 10 hits. He gave up 3 homers. And it was just a tough loss last night. It's an 11-2 loss coming off of a series with the Cubs where, you know, Trevor Richards said after his start, he started the fourth game of that series with the Cubs. If you didn't watch the series with the Cubs, the Marlins went 1-3 over that stretch. They won the first game. They lost on back-to-back nights on walk-off homers, and then they lost 4-1 to the Cubs in their final game, a day game on Thursday. And so you felt like the Marlins really competed, and that's what Trevor Richards said. He was like, look, we competed with a really, really good team. You know, those guys are legitimate ball players over there. You know, they obviously, most of them have been to a World Series and won a World Series before for a reason, and we're out here playing really good competitive ball, and that's what you can expect going forward. And then on Friday night, the Marlins lose 11-2. So it's one of those games that's frustrating. It's sort of an aberration. I mean, Pablo's been pretty good. If from the beginning of the year, he had a couple of okay starts, but now, and so his ERA was up towards six, but it had been trending down, you know, when it was down right just above four. And then last night happens. And I'm just going to go ahead and give him a pass. On that one, I know that, you know, maybe some other people would disagree with me, but I'm more than willing to give Pablo Lopez a pass. Number one, because he's been pitching well. If you look at his recent starts, he's been throwing the ball really well. And number two, the way that he handled the post-game press conference and the way that he handles representing this team consistently, to be honest with you, it was pretty incredible. And if you haven't had a chance, I have tweeted it from my account, but if you want, I'll also retweet it from the Swings and Misses account if you guys do want to see the way that Pablo responded after the game. But he was nothing but class and positivity and, like, look, owning his mistakes and as a pitcher and being able to, you know, come back and be positive and say, look, I'll be better next time. But all of that said, the Marlins are in a kind of frustrating spot. They're 10-28. You know, Pablo has a bad start last night, but really the offense has obviously been the most frustrating point for the Marlins. I think I saw in their last 11 games, they've only scored more than two runs three times in their last 11 games. They've lost one of those games. They've won the other ones. And so Neil Walker and Martin Prado are your leading hitters, which is tough because you were hopeful that the young guys would be stepping up and being the guys leading the team. And as Fish Stripes so eloquently just tweeted at me before we started recording this episode, so thanks for this, guys. Since I wrote the article talking about JT Realmuto and Jorge Alfaro and how I felt Alfaro, you know, a legitimate major league hitter, and, you know, I still think that. One stretch doesn't mean anything. But since I wrote that article, he's got a 369 OPS and no extra base hits. So kiss of death from Jeremy Taché. All of that said, it's just a frustrating 10-28 start. And I don't think anybody thought they were going to be this bad. We all thought the Marlins would be one of the worst teams in the league. We thought they would at least compete to be, you know, one of the two or three worst teams in the league. And right now, they're the worst. And that sort of is what it is. I don't think anybody can be that upset considering this is obviously year two of a rebuild. Let's not over exaggerate, right? It's theoretically year two of a rebuild. But yes. Oh, sorry. The build. Thank you for correcting me. But I guess my question to you, Dutch, and my long-winded way of getting there, is, did you expect this? Did you expect this team to lose this many games? Because they've been competitive in a lot of them, but I can't imagine. I mean, this is the worst start in team history. The 1998 team even had a better start than this. So, you know, what are your takeaways so far this season as the team sits at 10-28?
Surprised a little bit. I mean, at the end of the day, we're talking about the difference right now of, am I surprised over they have like four less wins than what I thought they would have at this point?
Exactly.
But my overall takeaway, I mean, I just think, first of all, I think the offense have just really just let the pitching down. And that's how you get to that point. I mean, when your pitching, you know, is going out there and competing against good teams that they've played lately and, you know, only giving up 3-4 runs,
right?
It's inexcusable to lose those games. Like, you can't just be scoring 1-2 runs a game. So I think there's a lot of actual positives to take out. You when you're 10-28, it's hard to be like, oh, there's so many positives here. But when you're in the second year of a build, I think it's better to break everything down individually rather than looking at the full team. Like, until I looked today And I mean, I may not watch every game lately, mm-hmm. but I still, after every night, still go and look what happened, go right. check what's going on in the minor leagues. I didn't know and really don't care that they're 10-28. Not right. in a way like, oh, I don't care about them. Just in a way like, I don't care what their record is. I didn't care when it was 0-0. I don't care. And I'm not going to care in game 162.
Right. Well, that's actually a conversation I had at the very beginning of the year. And wrote actually about on fivereasonsports.com was the record was not going to matter this year. Let the team entertain you and focus on anything that can go toward the future. And that's what you're saying right here is you want to break it down individually and look at the positives in individual players.
Yeah. Like you tell me, oh, the Marlins are 10-28 and their offense sucks. I'll go, okay, yeah, but you know, they probably legit found their best pitcher.
Right.
They got a good arm back in Bryce, you know, mm-hmm. Anderson's okay. The numbers aren't there yet, but he's turned it around from his like dreadful start for like yes. the first 3 weeks of the season. He's turned it around. Miguel mm-hmm. Rojas has kind of proven he can be a everyday major league shortstop, which is, yeah. was surprising given where he was 4 years ago.
Absolutely. I think that's actually one of the best surprises. Not surprises, because I don't think it necessarily shocks people that have paid attention to Rojas, but it's mm-hmm. one of the most pleasant surprises of the season so far. I agree with you.
Yeah, and I mean, you can say, I look, Alfaro, given what he's had the past couple weeks, because you cursed mm-hmm. him, he's good. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. he's a good piece.
Right.
So that's what I look. I mean, if you come in, if you're looking at this and you're going to be like, oh, I'm so mad Starlin Castro's not carrying the Marlins to 13 wins at this point.
Right, right.
Then, like, you're being mad at the wrong things. Yeah, I mean, you can be mad that Starlin Castro's on the team. You can be mad that Neil Walker's in the lineup all the time. That's the legitimate criticism that I'm sure we'll get into. But, I mean, if that's what you're going to come on and be, like, mad about, in a performance standpoint, in a record standpoint, then you're looking to be mad. Because, I mean, it's hard to look at it, but there's a good amount of positives in the 10-28.
Yeah, I actually, so I agree with you, and we'll sort of transition here. In terms of dealing with the veterans in the lineup, right? So, like I pointed out, Neil Walker and Martin Prado are actually leading the team in hitting. And Neil Walker, my goodness, he's had a really good year to start. I mean, mm-hmm. it's actually pretty great. Now, he missed a few games. He's hurt. He's well outperformed what I anticipated that the Marlins were going to be getting out of him. I thought, and it's kind of similar to what we've gotten out of Curtis Granderson thus far, is some production occasionally, but really just being a good influence on the young guys in the locker room. And yet, Neil Walker is hitting .289. I mean, that's shocking. But going to the sentiment of what you were just talking about, it's If you're mad at the overall record, or if you're someone that's just paying attention to wins and losses, I think you're sort of missing the point of this season. Look, you want this team to compete. You can mm-hmm. get frustrated at what you pointed out from the beginning, which is the offense letting the pitching down. An ordinary, you know, MLB replacement level type team offensively, like your average, sorry, instead of replacement level, your average Major League Baseball team, if they got the starting pitching and even the relief pitching in a lot of circumstances that the Marlins have had through most of the season, they're a lot better than 10-28. So you can be frustrated that your pitchers have sort of, in some ways, lived up to expectation coming out of spring training, and yet you're not having any semblance of success on the field in terms of wins and losses. But wins and losses aren't necessarily what we are looking for this season. If you're going to be bad, this is something we talk about with the Miami Dolphins all the time. If you're going to be bad, you might as well be the worst, right? Yeah. Or even you've talked about, I know, with the Miami Heat in your sort of controversial ways, but if you're going to be bad, be the worst, right? Yeah. So if
never be Riley.
Oh, God, why would you do? Whatever. Anyway, that's not sponsored by this podcast. Swings and Misses does not believe in Dutch's take on Pat Riley. But if you're going to be bad, you might as well be the worst. And so the Marlins are going to end up with Spencer Torkelson, or Spencer Tankelson, as I like to say. But based off of everything that you're talking about, I actually want to pick out the conversation around the veterans. Mm-hmm. So Curtis Granderson has been in the lineup every single day, sort of regardless of production, almost every single day, sort of regardless of production. Starlin Castro, same deal. Now, Starlin Castro, hopefully, and I think will turn it around. He had such a fluke 0-for-29 stretch there that was so bizarre, considering he wasn't striking out.
Yeah.
He wasn't striking out. It's just hitting into bad luck. But nonetheless, I can understand some of the people, and I've had actually a few different Marlins fans sort of reach out to me over the last couple of weeks looking for Harold Ramirez to come up, and we'll get to that in a second. Looking for, you know, some of these young guys to come up, because if I'm going to be watching this team lose, I'd at least like to know what the future is going forward. And so I don't want to watch, this is not my words, this is what some of these people have reached out and said, it's, I don't want to watch this team lose when it's all these veterans out there that are only going to be here for the short term. I'd at least like to know what I have going forward. There's two arguments to be made there. In some ways, I absolutely agree with you. I'd love to know, because I think there are certain players on this AAA team, and we can get into that in a second, that absolutely are ready to be up at the big league level, that have proven what they're going to prove at the AAA level, or even, you know, other levels in the minor leagues. And at this point, bring them up, sit some of those veterans, and move forward. On the other hand, there's certainly a respect that I can have for this regime thus far and not wanting to rush guys to the big leagues. That's something that the previous regime did constantly. And I wouldn't say ruined the careers of certain players, but there were some guys that were these highly touted prospects that were the guys you wanted to be the next person that got called up too quickly. And you see this all around the major leagues all the time. And it sort of sent their career on a downward path because they were challenged in a way that they weren't ready for quite yet. So I can respect keeping some of the higher rated prospects like Monte Harrison, like Eason Diaz at the AAA level until you are 1,000% sure they're ready to tear it up at the big league level.
Mm-hmm.
But Craig reported on Thursday on our podcast that Harold Ramirez would be called up eventually. Now last night he reported that he's on his way up. I don't know if that means tonight. I don't know if that means tomorrow, but the Marlins are calling up Harold Ramirez. I'm excited about that because Harold Ramirez has been on fire for a year. I mean, he crushed it in a winter ball. He's crushing it in New Orleans right now, where he's hitting .355. He has a .999 OPS. I'm excited to see Harold Ramirez. That's one of the young guys that I think a lot of fans have been clamoring for. But I would love to know your opinion on, do you think that there are maybe some other moves that should or could be made, you know, with guys like, I mean, Austin Dean, with guys like JT Riddle, who's now down back in the minor leagues, who was seemingly a piece at one point and now has been playing some outfield in the minor leagues, you know, and then what do you think about what I said about Harrison and Diaz? Like, are you on the same page there? I'd love to know what you think about sort of that concept.
Okay, so when you were mentioning, oh, put the veterans aside, I mean, I don't see why they just don't, you know, just shuffle players around. Like, these guys have options. They're young players on team control. There's guys you can shuffle around with options. Peter O'Brien, I believe, still has options. Rossell Herrera probably still has options. You know, there's guys on the roster that has options. And so I think there's just moving around. There's nothing wrong with sending guys down to AAA to go work on things.
Right.
So I think they should make a whole shuffle of moves. And I think that includes pitching. Like, Trevor Richards.
Yeah. I know you mentioned Richards previously, as someone that you felt like, call up Gallen, send down Richards. I still don't know if I totally agree with that, but I can understand the sentiment in what you're saying, which is basically play with your 40 man. You have a 40 man for a reason.
You have a 40 man full of young players,
right,
in the AAA level. A lot of the 40 man roster is in AAA or in AA. I mean, but you shouldn't call up anybody from AA.
Right, but
but you have a lot of 40 man players in AAA. That just shuffle them up. There's Austin Dean is a major league baseball player. He should be in the major leagues, especially on a 10-28 team.
Right.
He sh- he should be in the major leagues. JT Riddle should be in the major leagues. Mm-hmm. He has proven that he has no reason to be down in the minor leagues. Harold Ramirez should be in the major leagues.
Right.
He's coming up. So, I mean, these are all moves that they should make. Elijah Hernandez should be in the major leagues.
Yeah.
Harlan Garcia should be in the major leagues. Like, there's just so many guys down there that should be up there.
You know, it's kind of funny. The way that you're talking about this is actually kind of ringing a bell for another team here in South Florida, and I'm going back to it again. It's kind of funny. What we're talking about is a group of players that are tweeners between major leaguers and minor leaguers, right? We're talking about guys that none of the guys that you just mentioned are necessarily, I mean, hopefully this is the case, besides obviously Monte Harrison, but none of the guys that you just mentioned are necessarily supposed to come up to the bigs and be superstars. They're all supposed to be, hopefully, solid players. Some of the guys that theoretically would be sent down are in that same sort of boat.
Yeah.
And it kind of reminds me, so I like the idea because you can play with a roster. Like, I get what you're going for there. It kind of reminds me, again, of the Miami Heat, where you would say, like, they have 12 productive NBA basketball players, but they're all somewhere between, like, a 78 and 82 and an NBA 2K rating, right? Mm-hmm. Where they're all basically the same level of player, and so they had trouble figuring out throughout the year, all right, who's the guy that should be our star on any given night? What you're sort of talking about is, all right, the Marlins have a group of probably really almost all of their position players. Yeah, the only guys right now that absolutely should be in the lineup every single day because of youth and production, I would say, would be Alfaro and Anderson.
Yeah.
Right. And so those two guys. Right. Besides that, I get what you're
everybody
saying.
Everybody in AAA
can sort of play.
They're interchangeable.
They have options, is what you're saying.
If they have options.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to necessarily DFA guys willy-nilly, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, besides Walker and Castro and Prado, you don't want a DFA.
Right.
But I mean, like, everybody else, even if you remove them from the roster, odds are they're going to clear waivers and they're going to just end up back in AAA anyway. Mm-hmm. So, and there's a legit argument to be made that probably anybody right now in AAA offensively that starts down in AAA will just come up to the major leagues and give the same production.
At least.
Or better.
Right.
Like, the worst case scenario is they're going to give the same production that the person that's up there right now is going to make. So why not just give them a chance?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And I think that that's something that could sort of, as like it's what we talked about wrapping back around to the beginning. 10 and 28 is one thing. 10 and 28 without sort of seeing the future or without sort of seeing hope is another thing. And so, like you talked about, you want to be able to, at the end of this season, know, okay, these are individuals that we absolutely want to be a part of this ball club going forward. These are individuals that we don't necessarily think make the cut. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the difference would be that I'm talking about from the fan perspective, because obviously the organization can make those types of decisions and make that type of analysis by watching their players every single day at either the major or the minor league level. But just purely from the fan perspective, being in a spot where you can see physically, not just in September, but in May or June or July, some of these young guys come up and have to produce in Major League Baseball games that matter to other teams is important. And I tend to agree with you that you know, right now it looks like Ramirez, you know, I did tweet out last night that I think you could see maybe some other changes made to this roster, and that don't be shocked if you see them sometime soon. But hopefully, you know, we see them in sort of the perspective that you're talking about. And so it is going to be interesting to see who goes up, who goes down, if there are any sort of DFAs type of moves, because I think it's important that, you know, this team gets the best out of itself. I think 10 and 28 is one thing. I think losing so many games without any sort of offensive production is another.
And it's kind of like what I'm saying is like kind of like remember in 2013 and that rebuild.
Right.
Where, okay, the talent that they have now is not like the talent they had down there.
Sure.
At that time. But they had an injury in the major league level. They call up Marcell Ozuna early in the year. Ozuna came up, Mm-hmm. And he was decent. He wasn't great. He wasn't bad. But what'd they do? They sent him down because he had options.
Right.
And they called up Christian Yelich.
Right. Right.
Like that's what they should be doing.
Right.
We have one good prospect up. We saw this guy. We called up this prospect. Mm-hmm. He showed what he can do for a little bit at the major league level. We got our test. He's probably shouldn't be up here right now anyway. So let's send him back down and try out someone else.
Right.
And then look what happened.
Yeah.
Christian Yelich and Marcelo Ozuna became superstars.
Yeah. It's actually one of the the only things where I'm going to say, hey, yeah, that old regime handled that the right way.
Yeah.
But yes, they did. And I don't disagree with you. Look, you're right.
Those guys came up highly, too.
Well, and those guys were more highly touted prospects than some of the guys that we're talking about right now. But that's also sort of irrelevant. It's about
players the best chance to succeed.
Right.
Because when you're in the PCL, when you're in New Orleans, you're going to hit.
Yeah.
So a lot of those numbers are inflated. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of does a disservice to yourself to be like, okay, they're raking in AAA, keep them there.
Right.
You don't know because a 999 OPS in AAA is most likely not 999 OPS in the majors.
Right.
Or even in other AAA cities.
Yeah, not necessarily. Right.
So we don't know unless you physically bring them up there. You can't just like go into spring training. Oh, look, all these guys had great years at AAA.
Right. Right.
We need to see what they can do at the major league level.
Right, and not just in September. Because as we've talked about, spring training and September each are kind of mirages and can be mirages for what players are. I totally agree with you on this in that if you can play around with some options, there's no reason not to shake things up. Look, I'm not of the belief whatsoever that the Marlins should be DFAing any of these veterans, to be honest with you. I think all of these guys are not only, for that matter, pretty productive on the field for the most part. You know, there are exceptions to that, but not only have the veterans sort of carried the offense and what the offense has been, but each one of these guys is really remarkable. I mean, I know I'm sort of new to the really covering a team thing. I've been around this market for a couple of years now. I've been around the Marlins for last season and now this season. I know I'm not there every day. And I give such credit to the beat writers that are there every single day. I know I'm not there every day, but being around that clubhouse, you physically can see so easily the influence that Martin Prado, that Neil Walker, that Curtis Granderson, even Starlin Castro, that those veterans have on the young players that are, you know, at times struggling to produce on the field. And just the way that those guys are guiding some of the younger players makes them worth sticking around no matter what. But I don't disagree with you that when there are guys with options, that we should be toying with those options to figure out, okay, who at the AAA level needs to come up, who at the major league level needs to go down, and who can sort of go back and forth until we figure out, yes, this player, and this player are productive Major League Baseball players, and this player, and this player are not.
And it's not a criticism or a negative thing towards the guys in the major leagues.
Not at all.
Like, this was a frustration I had. Like, I liked the idea of sending Brinson down. Mm-hmm. I would have preferred it to be in Double A, but whatever. I liked the idea of Brinson going down. But I didn't like the idea of replacing him with John Birdie or, like, Isaac Galloway. I mean, no offense to them. Isaac Galloway's a good guy. He's a good baseball player. Mm-hmm. Who's in AAA.
Right.
But at the end of the day, he's 29 years old.
Right. You wanted to see more youth come up. Theoretically, Harold Ramirez. Theoretically, Monte Harrison.
Harrison, yes. Yeah, replace them with prospects. Like, replace them with guys with upside. Like, you can't just be replacing them with guys that are placeholders. Yeah.
Theoretical placeholders.
They're not even placeholders. They're
And I would say, look, like you just mentioned, both Birdie and Galloway have actually been relatively productive. Galloway's in one of those stretches right now where it's not looking great, but both of those guys have been productive. Both of them are solid Major League Baseball players. Both of them actually are probably Major League Baseball players. But I get what your point is. It's not necessarily a slight on them as much as it's more if you're going to send down one guy that had upside – please send up another one that has upside as well. And so we're going to move off this conversation and wrap up real quick with just more just sort of a take than anything. And then we'll get, if you guys don't know, and if you've clicked on this through Twitter, you do know this, but we will have an interview. Tony, our do-it-all photographer, went up to Jupiter and interviewed Todd Pratt, the manager of the Hammerheads. And so we will have conversation there from Tony. But wrapping things up, you know, the MLB draft is coming up, and this is more just because we haven't had this conversation on this podcast yet, and I wanted to just sort of get to, you know, it's a little bit away, and I'm sure Craig and I will break down the draft as we get closer, but I just sort of wanted to ask you more of an overarching question. There are three players that have sort of been linked to the Marlins the most here, one of which we don't think will slip, but it's Andrew Vaughn, the first baseman out of Cal, J.J. Bleday, the outfielder out of Vanderbilt, and then C.J. Abrams, the shortstop out of Blessed Trinity Catholic High School in Georgia. Mm-hmm. I guess my overall question, and then there's Riley Green after that as well, an outfielder out of Oviedo, actually, Hagerty High School. My question to you is, as we're going through, because neither of us, let's be real, like, let's just be straightforward about this. Neither of us have sat here and broken down the swings or the play of these players. We're not paying that close attention. Honestly,
we've only read up on something.
We've read up. Like, I've read up on these guys. I've watched some of their tape in recent weeks because it's gotten closer. But I'm not going to act like I'm an expert quite yet. Yeah, on any
I did it more last year.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to pretend. I have knowledge here, but I'm not spending all of my time looking at these prospects. My question is more overarching. It's not about the individual players as much as it's a thought process. Would you prefer the Marlins take a college bat or a high school bat that might have some more upside? So theoretically, CJ Abrams and Riley Green might have, because they're young kids, they're high schoolers, a little more upside in growth, but you know what you're going to get, theoretically, out of Andrew Vaughn and J.J. Bleday. What mindset are you of going into this specific draft with the Marlins? I stumped you.
Well, because I'm just trying to figure out what their exact timeline is.
Right.
When do they expect to compete? Mm-hmm. Because if it's 2021,
yeah,
I go college bet.
Right.
Get someone there who will be there in 2021.
Right.
If it's you're there and you're like, okay, maybe we're 2022, 2023.
Right.
Then I don't think you can pass up on the pure talent and the upside of one of these high school guys. I keep referring back to this time. It reminds me of the 2014 draft where you had Rodon and Kolek on the board. Mm-hmm. And the Marlins were having a pretty decent season year two of the rebuild. They were actually like flirting in the wild card. Casey McGee was going crazy.
It
was
right, weird. Right, right.
Everything was strange.
Oh my God, McGee, wow. I blocked that out of my mind. Oh my God.
Everything was strange. Casey McGee was an all-star. Like,
right.
This was honestly one of the most fun seasons I've ever had as a Marlins fan. Uh-huh. But you saw, Yelich was up. All these guys were up. You were like, okay, this team's going to compete within the next couple years.
Right.
They need more pitching. Rodon was the obvious choice. Like, there was no reason to not go anyone but Rodon, but for whatever reason, they didn't. Yeah. They went Kolek. They went with a high school on.
Right.
And
theoretically should have taken
the college guy that everybody said he could be in the major leagues, not even next year. He could be in the major leagues
next month. Right.
Like, right. Just put him down in AAA or AA for a couple weeks. Right. And if you're in a wild card run, he can probably come up.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess not to interrupt your thought here, but I'm getting sort of the vibe that you're talking about, which is basically planning for whenever you're supposed to peak.
Yes.
The other argument that I can make, and sort of the space where I'm at, is I want one of the college bats. So, like, if Vaughn is gone, please take Bleday. And the reason I feel that way is I'm not saying either of these guys is necessarily like Peter Alonso, right? Because Peter Alonso is having a historic rookie season. But Peter Alonso probably could have been up sooner than he was for the Mets. He could have been up producing at the big league level kind of whenever they needed him to. And when what we've talked about is that the offense in the Marlins system is sort of barren, and we don't see a lot of guys that we can 100% project to be major leaguers, I'm sort of the belief of go grab yourself what is already a relatively polished professional hitter that can come up and within the next year or two be there and ready to produce. Because even if they're for, like you're saying, when do you want to compete? I'm saying, you know what? I'm okay if JJ Bleda has already played two seasons for the Marlins before they're in total compete mode. Like, I'm okay. I'd like to see some good, young, professional results come from years of losing, right? And I'm not to, that's not to say that CJ Abrams can't absolutely be a superstar, and he might end up ultimately being better. I don't know the answer to that. And honestly, neither do you, and neither does anybody listening to this podcast. There's no way for anybody to actually predict who's going to necessarily succeed. We look at the top 10 every single year, the top 20. Yeah, Mike Trout was the 20th pick in a first-round draft. Like, in a baseball draft, you never know. So to me, I'm just of the mindset, go take a guy that's proven it against, obviously, better pitching, right? Like, let's not mess around here. I was a all-county pitcher in high school.
Oh, no. Yeah,
some high school kid was the best he was facing was me. Yeah. I'm 5'9" and Jewish, and I threw like 80 miles an hour. So I know that J.J. Bleda has faced tougher pitching in the SEC than C.J. Abrams or Riley Green have faced. Riley Green's here in the state of Florida. I know that the pitching that he's...
Hey, don't credit yourself. You were 8A, what, 8A, right?
That's 8A? I was 8A.
That's a good conference, though.
Good, man.
Conference.
It's like, it matters.
Flanagan High School.
Right. So I'm not trying to mess around here, but what I am trying to say is, like, I know JJ Bleda can hit pitchers that will probably play in the major leagues. We had that conversation with Zach Gallen, because Zach Gallen was talking about playing in the ACC and saying how playing in North Carolina prepared him great to get to the minor leagues because he was facing all these kids that were going to be pros.
Yeah.
JJ Bleda and Andrew Vaughn playing in the Pac-12 and in the SEC are doing the same thing. They're facing so many pitchers that ultimately are going to end up in the minor leagues or maybe the major leagues. I don't know if CJ Abrams has ever faced one. And I know we can project based off of, you know, like the Perfect Game USA tournaments and all of those types of things. So I'm not trying to totally discredit it, right?
Yeah. But
you're facing young kids. You don't really know the answer. And so I'm sort of the belief at this point that I would love that with where the Marlins are currently at in terms of their organizational depth with bats, if they took someone that I can almost guarantee within a year, year and a half, will be up at the big league level if they just produce the way that we think that they will. Not even necessarily overachieving, just the way that they've done thus far. And so that's sort of where I'm at with all of this. But as we wrap this up, it's a reminder that we stay tuned right now because we are going to have an interview with Todd Pratt, the manager in Jupiter, with some of those young to talk about some of those young arms and some of the young position players that ultimately you might see at the major league level within the next few years. Dutch, thanks for coming on with us today and being part of the what do we call us? The fourth outfielders?
Fourth outfielders are defensive replacements. We haven't.
I'll use a slash, but thanks for joining me, man.
Or minor league debt.
You got to see two of them today. Starting with Braxton Garrett. Came out for Tommy John, and shows a lot of strikeout potential.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, he's really just really hasn't pitched a season in pro ball yet. And, you know, kids really just came out of high school, even though it's been 2 years, because he's with the injury. You know, plus breaking ball, good changeup, composure. I mean, he just needs his reps.
Saw Jordan Holloway a little bit longer. He had almost the same timeline. More starts. He coached Holloway in
Greensboro too, 2 years ago.
And he's been got a couple good starts now. Like,
oh yeah, well he's got three weapons in his arsenal. You know, I mean, he's a top line front end starter, and you know, obviously with his velocity and curveball, and I mean, he's got three plus pitches. So he just needs his innings. You know. You know, there's high expectations, but we try to keep him steady head and just let it happen.
And Trevor Rogers today I know it's like a lot of these guys are like really good with like with high. There's like a lot of like strikeouts, past innings pitched. The way I think like this group has been really good at like getting guys out, even if they get tagged a couple times, most of their outs have come through strikeouts. Is this like,
well, two of them are first round picks, yeah. And Holloway was a gem in the middle rounds. You know, they're the future of the Marlins pitching staff, and what you've seen is what we all know. They all need reps. You know, last year Rogers was his first year pitching, and so he's entering his second season, and just they all got composure and they all have the stuff. Now it's just about getting reps, innings.
During your playing days, you had the Phillies during their World Series run in '93, and the Mets in their run, yeah, in 2000. In the twilight of the Braves years in like 06, I believe.
Yeah.
They've all had like really good staffs.
Mm-hmm.
But from a potential standpoint, does like this group stack up or like look like they could potentially be something like that you've seen in the past?
Well, I can't compare, you know, veteran, mm-hmm, staffs. I just think they all have bright futures. They all have a chance to be in a major league rotation. All it is their development, and if they stay healthy.
I think the best guy he has so far is Edward Cabrera. Like, he's the last like three starts, he's given up a run.
He's been great. I mean, him and Holloway are very comparable. I mean, they both throw 97, 98 miles an hour with big league curve balls and plus changes. Holloway and Cabrera are very, very comparable front end starters.
One thing I've noticed recently, and I guess there's connection points with some of these guys, Garrett and Will Stewart, teammates for the first time, but both high school products from Alabama.
Yeah.
Holloway and Garrett went through Tommy John rehab together and roommate together in Jupiter. There's like a lot of like, there's like, they seem like a close knit group, a lot of chemistry. Is that,
well, they're most definitely bonding. I think they all compete off each other, which is great, kind of compared to the Braves staff that I wasn't a part of. But, you know, those three guys, you know, it's just like they work hard together. They compete against each other, and it's only going to make them better in the future.
I know this was, I think, over 32 probably years, yeah, ago since the last time you played in the Florida State League. How much different has this league changed since between your playing days and now your coaching piece here?
I can't remember. it's, you know, definitely it's a pitching league, and I think that's due to the big stadiums and the ball doesn't really fly due to the humidity. But you know, compared to the players now back in 1987, there really is no comparison. They're much better.
The lifestyle also has to be better too, right? Like, it has to be like this.
Yeah, the way they take care of the players and have the strength and conditioning coaches and make sure they're fed, most definitely. But, you know, I'm not complaining about 1987 either. It was fun years.
Yeah. I think Don Manley was also in that maybe a little bit earlier in that decade. I remember talking to him one time, but he told me, like, when he was in Greenboro, his meal budget during, like, road trips was, yeah, like $4.25 going to the game and then $4.25 going back to the game.
Yeah, it's something like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember, but it wasn't like it is now. So you had to survive, you know? I mean, I remember bringing coolers full of groceries just on the road, you know, I try to save my money.
I know, you know, I've talked to a lot of people, or a lot of, like, reporters have tried to get more about the lifestyle of a minor league player. What's a typical day like for a minor league manager?
I show up here about 10 o'clock in the morning and kind of go through all my paperwork and set my lineups, and my day starts at 10 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, tonight I'll probably get home at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, you're here for these kids to mentor them and help them develop and kind of share your experiences in your playing career and help them. I wish I would have had someone like me when I was this young, you know, as young as these guys. But, you know, it's a long work days, and I love it.
Yeah, I know it's like a man of your experience. It's great for kids like here because baseball is just like stacked. Like, the adversity is always like stacked. Just like trying to like survive week to week.
Yeah, you just got to, you know, you got to be even keel with your emotion and know it's a 140 game season, and you know, there's definitely ups and downs for these young men, but you just got you got to steady the ship and just show them that every day you're the same.
One thing doing my research, I found really interesting. Between, I think it was like 96, you worked in, you were out of baseball, you worked in pizza, and you also worked as a instructor with Bucky Dent's school. And then you got back into baseball.
Yeah.
Was there a lesson that you probably learned from the Bucky Dent camp that helped you get back into baseball?
No, the Mets asked me to come back, and, you know, I was trying to take care of my wife and kid, and, you know, I got lucky. I mean, Mets asked me to come to spring training in 97, and the rest is history.
Appreciate your time.
Oh, no, thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Do you ever feel like you're always on? Your phone is blowing up with notifications, you have commitments to friends and family, and not to mention work. Sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. It's a crisp and refreshing beer that even tells you it's cold when the mountains on the bottles and cans turn blue. When I need to hit reset, I grab a Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to coorslight.com/bluewire. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.